You're listening to The Laughter Life.
Laughter Life.
Laughter Life.
The Laughter Life.
The Laughter Life.
Laughter Life with Adam McKay. Available now on all major podcast networks. Ow!
Welcome to The Laughter Life. I am your host. You know who I am. I'm not sure how you got here. We can be found anywhere that you get your podcasts. But I'd like to take this time to give a shout out to our hosts, the people that we've been with from day one, and that is Castbox. They've been great for us. They've been great to us, great to work with. They're kind of the, I don't want to say new guy on the block, but they're one of the smaller podcast networks, but they are mighty, small but mighty. And they got a real great search engine on there, and they have an app. And you can check them out at castbox.fm on the web, and you can also download their app. Anywhere that you find apps, Google Play Store, the Apple App Store, I guess. But they're great. And we really appreciate all the help and support that they've given us. Moving on, you can also follow us at Twitter at LaughLifeAdam. We have a Patreon page. There's lots of links all over my feed for Patreon. And you can go to our website, laughterlife.ca, and all of the different the podcast links are there, the YouTube links are there, the Twitter links are there. All kinds of shit's there for you, okay? So tonight's another very special Midnight Edition episode, being recorded from an undisclosed location. Initially, I was going to... You know, the last Midnight Edition we did Fear. This one I wanted to do Sadness, but I posed a question on Twitter to the Twitterverse, and I got a lot of great questions and responses there. So we're going to forego the sad theme tonight, and I'm going to just touch on this Twitter stuff. Basically just sent out a little tweet asking some really great engaging creatives that I follow for some random questions to discuss, and that's what we're going to do. So without further ado, I'm going to get into it here. There's tons of stuff. okay, sorry, I'm just replying to this guy who just said he was on a plane. I'll probably have to edit this shit out anyway. Okay, so let's go here. How do I do this? Do I go to the top or the bottom to get the first question? I'll go all the way to the bottom, I think. Okay. Best video games, best moments, best single player, best multiplayer, etc. Favorite aspects of games. What kind of game would you build? That's a great question that comes from our friends over at Top Rope Wrestling, and they're at TRW Top Rope on Twitter. The best video games. I like the best video games are the ones that you can be immersed in the story most completely. I guess they would be called sandbox games. I like the games where you have a lot of freedom to be creative within the game. So whether that is, customizing your character's whatever, whole existence within that game, whether it's their base or their clothes or who they are, those are the games that grab me the most. The best single player game, to me, I don't know, Fallout maybe, Fallout series. Best multiplayer game, that's a tough one. Could be Mario Kart 64, could be Fortnite, could be the Resident Evil series. Any one of those would be good. I already touched on the aspects of games in my favorite. Favorite aspect of games is just the creativity and what kind of game would I build. I actually wrote a story for a video game. It never got made, that myself and a good friend, Kevin Lusty, we were working on. He was working with the Unreal Engine, and he had purchased it back when you had to purchase it. Now you can use it for basically nothing. And if you sell over a certain amount of video games, you just give those people like a cut of whatever. I don't know what percentage it has to be. But he actually purchased this, the Unreal Engine, and we were building a game, and I wrote a story for it, and it was called Dead of Winter, and it was basically kind of like a cross between Resident Evil and Dead Island, maybe. I can't remember the name. There's a game that was out for Xbox and I think PC about four different characters on this island of zombies, basically. So it was kind of a between them. And there was one of the characters was an electrician, one of the characters was a boxer, one was a firefighter, one was a nurse. And you could pick one of those, and each had their different abilities and stuff. And inspiration for that idea for me was playing the game called The Thing for Xbox, and that was an amazing game, and it was actually a sequel to the movie The Thing. And in that game there was a couple of different characters that had different attributes, and they had different things that they could do, and you needed to use each one of them to succeed. Anyway, thanks for the question. That's a great question. Okay, you got another one. Jeanette from, she's at J-Hope Writer on Twitter. How many light bulbs does it take to turn on a human? I don't know. I have no idea. Depends on how perverted you are, I guess. Okay, the next question is, why is El Diablo afraid of lost underpants? And this is coming from Bill and Frankie Pop Culture. And I don't know. I don't know, man. I wish I had some more computing power to give you a nice, fun, engaged answer to this question about these two fictional characters. But I don't have it in me. I don't have it in me. But my, you know, if it's true that El Diablo is afraid of Los Underpants, I would suspect he's afraid of him because there's only one person crazier than El Diablo, and that might just be Los Underpants, okay? Okay, another question from Jeanette. If time travel was made available to the public tomorrow, what would the laws and rules be? Ooh, I think there would be... What would the laws and rules be? I think you'd have to do an aptitude test. Not necessarily an IQ test, although I'm not sure there's a big difference between the two. I don't know. I think there'd be a lot of checks and balances put in place, and they wouldn't just allow Joe Blow anybody to do that, because, of course, there'd be huge consequences if they went back and fucked shit up, so... I just think the rules and the laws would be very strenuous, and that's what I think. Okay, another one from Bill and Frank. Who killed JR? I have no idea, man. I didn't watch that shit. I don't think they found out, did they? But you are conjuring up an eye. That reminds me of an SNL skit. And who the hell was it? Somebody was leaving the show. And they... Was it a Who Shot JR? Who Killed JR parody? Or was it a... Lee Harvey Oswald parody? Or maybe they're one and the same. But maybe it was Chris Elliott got shot? He was going to leave the show or something. Anyway. Don't know who killed JR. Okay, this one we got from Rick Grosner. And he's at Dumbass G... genius, dumbass genius. Is there enough humor about the future, which is barreling towards us to kick our asses? That's kind of a cool question. I'm sure that there is. I've not been exposed to any there, Rick, but perhaps there's some comedians out here that touch on tech and touch on, you know, some ideas about the future a little bit. That's the kind of the trick of life, isn't it? The future, it is barreling towards us, and no matter what is in store, it's gonna always kick our asses until I'm dead, basically. I don't know what's gonna happen to you people, but it's gonna continue to kick our asses until I'm dead, and then once that happens, I don't give a shit what's gonna go on. Okay, how do comedy writers feel about the current comedy climate? Has Trump stripped everyone's gears? How has sensitivity to racism and gender issues changed or improved comedy? Well, I'm not necessarily a comedy writer. I mean, I do write comedies, but it's all speculative, and nobody's really went out on a limb for me yet. But I'll go ahead and, you know, try to give you my take on that, Rick. I think the current comedy climate is terrific. I think there is a great deal of backlash that comes from social media and people that are, I'll say, a little bit sensitive about stuff. Sure there is. But I think that comedy is just kind of forging its way forward regardless. And it's only those that are employed by the big corporations that need to remain sort of squeaky clean. It's only those guys that really have to castrate their comedy. And sometimes it's not necessarily castrating their comedy. They just have to curb it to fit a broader audience. And if that broader audience is growing more sensitive as time rolls on, because it's such a, you know, diversity is continually growing and there's new sects of each sects and sexes, I guess. Fuck. You know, it's funny how all these people, there's so many groups and there's so many marginalized people. And typically they, you know, they're saying we don't want to be marginalized. And what is, you know, society's response to that is like, let's create new margins. You're no longer L. You're LBGTQ+AISIO, whatever it is, right? It's just keeps going down the line until eventually it'll come around full circle to what I kind of believe in is like, you know what? Enough with all the groups. What's the population of planet Earth? 7 point whatever billion. That's how many groups there are. You're born, you're the group. You're in a group, okay? Nobody can speak for you. You can't speak for anybody else. It's your personal opinion on whichever it is you're talking about. That's kind of what I believe. So I'm not sure if I answered your question, Rick. Right. How do comedy writers feel about the current comedy? I think it's great. I'm still watching. You know, I've watched a lot of the big wig stand-ups, you know, Bill Burr and who else have I watched? Dave Chappelle. I think those guys are the top of their game. Ricky Gervais. Those three guys, to me, are the tops. And, you know, I don't think the climate's affected them whatsoever. Their comedy's as strong and as terrific as always, and I love those guys, and I think it's great. So that's my answer for that. Has Trump stripped everyone's gears? I think mentally a little bit. They just... and I don't know the man, and I don't... You know, I don't really have much to base an opinion on from other than the sound bites you get in the media. And I think regardless, you know, depending on which media you're watching, you're getting something that's pumping noise from an agenda machine. And regardless of who you're watching, left, right, center, anyone that's talking on one of these platforms, they all have an agenda. So you can't. It's hard to know what's the truth and what's what. Having said that, he certainly seems like an imbecile, and he certainly seems like a weird weaselly, I don't even know what the hell. I can't even believe he's risen to this height in this world. It baffles me. It does. It just baffles me. And if you're him, though, you know, I'm trying to empathize with the guy as I talk about him here. Yeah, I don't know if he's done... I don't know. I think the people to blame are the party. The people to blame are the political party that put them there. Shame on them, really. Like, this was kind of ridiculous that they allowed this to happen. And perhaps it was a big inside joke that most of the people on the planet aren't in on. And only the Bilderberg group or the Rothschilds or whoever is pulling the strings at the top. Maybe they're the only ones in on it, but I don't know, man. Yeah, I think it has stripped people's gears mentally. I think people are just sick of the bullshit, and they just, you know, they wanted to break the system by putting this buffoon in there, and now they're like, oh, maybe we should have just picked the evil we were used to instead of this new brand of evil. How has sensitivity to racism and gender issues changed? You have, in brackets, improved comedy. I don't know if it's improved comedy. I don't think it's worse than comedy either. But I think it's changed comedy in a way that it's just opening up new avenues that comedians might feel like they're forced to take. You know, they might, because of that awareness that the sensitivity has grown, perhaps comedians and comedy writers are going down paths they wouldn't otherwise go down. And, I mean, that's a new trail being blazed by them in their own mind. And that's kind of exciting. It's a new adventure for them because they're not going with their old material that they know would easily kill, you know, like the word retard as an example. Like, that's just an old word that used to be great, and it was funny. It gets all kinds of laughs, but it's, you know, now that we're I don't know what the word is. We're just, I guess we're growing more empathetic with people's sensitivities, and that's probably a good thing. You know, we just have to adapt as well, and that's what society's dictating for comedians. I mean, comedians serve society, so in a way it's good, in a way it's bad. It's kind of an interesting question, Rick, and I really appreciate it, and I have my doubts whether I even answered it, so I apologize for that. Okay, Bill and Frank, oh man, you're pumping the questions out. DVD or DivX? I don't know what DivX is, I know what a DVD is, but because I'm not familiar with DivX, I'm going to have to go with good old DVD. And I'll tell you what, the first DVD I ever owned was, I got it for Christmas. I believe it was called Desperate Measures, and it featured, I think Michael Keaton was in it. Is Michael Keaton in it? Maybe Bruce Willis? I don't know. Okay, most embarrassing moment involving pants. This is Bill and Frankie, pop culture. That's a good one. Well, I tore the arse out of a pair of pants when I was walking a beat policing in Charlottetown. And I was nowhere near the police station, so I think I had to walk about 10 blocks with this big hole in my arse. I think that's probably it. I mean, I don't particularly recall bumping into a lot of pedestrian traffic on my way back, but I remember being mortified, so I guess that's going to be my answer. Okay, I was left off this little... Okay, what are your thoughts on white pants after Labor Day? Fuck. I don't know a ton about this. I think something tells me it's like one of these old, bitty old bitches in the old... hoity-toity society in the 60s or 70s, or maybe it was even the 50s, I don't remember, but maybe it was Chanel, was it Coco Chanel? I feel like it was some bullshit catty fight, and there was like new money and old money, and the old money, they wanted to just make something up to make the new money people feel ousted or on the outside looking in. And I think that they just said you can't do that because somebody showed up to a party with white on and they just said it like as being a rude cunt. And you know, people say Coco Chanel was classy, and if this story is true, then she was classy, all right. She was a class A cunt. Okay, so that's my thoughts on that. I think it's bullshit. You wear white pants whenever the fuck you want, okay? Okay, Rick Rosner, another question. How has exposure to hundreds of jokes and bits each day changed writing? We have the most sophisticated writers and audience in history. Good, but challenging. or horribly frustrating. I think it makes the writing more challenging for sure, and I think the exposure, I think it's good. I think it's just creating new splinters of a pathway to another joke. You know, you might see hundreds of jokes a day, and I know we've all heard the, you know, you hear a joke one day and then 10 weeks later you think of something and it's that joke, but you think you thought of it like some kind of a, I don't know, some kind of a flatland mental problem. But I think it's good. I mean, I'm not on top of the pops by any means in terms of comedy or comedy writing, but I'm very, very aware of things that I watch. And in fact, when I think of something that I've thought of myself, I will Google the hell out of it and I'll YouTube the hell out of it and make sure that there's nothing that already kind of exists like that. So I think it's kind of a good thing. It's a good barometer to have to measure your own stuff against. And it is very sophisticated now, and the audience is great. And there's just so much. It's so, you know, this podcast, for instance, like 10 or 20 years ago, this would never be possible. Nobody would know the joys of hearing me ramble on like some kind of fucking monkey. So I think it is good but challenging. I don't find it horribly frustrating at all. In fact, I love it. I think it's great. And just the fact we're having this discourse right now it's a beautiful, wonderful thing. And I'll add this, even though it's not a part of the question, Rick, and I thank you for the question. I'm actually absolutely loving Twitter. I find it much more positive than I had, you know, built up. I had perceived that in my head there that it would be. Of course, I perceived in my head. Where else would I perceive, my fucking asshole? I just thought it would be a really negative troll-like space, and I'm sure perhaps it is in certain areas, but I feel like I've curated and surrounded myself with a really great following and very positive, creative people, and it's been wonderful. Moving on. Do you get to keep your Mountie uniform when you leave the force? Well, I didn't really have a... I worked for the RCMP, but I was there on a job placement with... through the police academy, the Atlantic Police Academy. So I wasn't technically a Mountie, even though I was there doing the same job. So I didn't get the Red Surge and the Stetson and all that shit. So I don't have that uniform, but I do believe they get to keep it. I could be wrong, but I think they get to keep it. Okay, why does the water dispenser on my refrigerator stop when my stupid wife opens the right side of the refrigerator while I'm getting water? Should I kill her? Well, I think it's probably a built-in feature, so it probably assumes you're getting water and opening the other side at the same time. It assumes that's happening with one person, and it maybe thinks you don't possess the mental fortitude to concentrate on both of those things at the same time. So it just cuts out the water flow. That's it. So... that's my guess. I have no fucking idea. But should I kill her? Frankly, Frank, I'm surprised that rigor mortis isn't already set in her for this transgression. But if it hasn't yet, then no, don't bother, I guess. Don't bother kill her. Okay, 8-Bit Couch Podcast. What are those little crevices on cat's ears? They look like a second ear. Is that what allows them to go to other dimensions? I've got no fucking idea. I wish you'd have put a picture up so I can look at it. Yeah, I don't know what that is. I'm guessing it's some sort of evolutionary thing. It's either halfway in or halfway out. You know, in another 100 years, it'll either be gone or it'll be evolved to something spooky. I don't know. Moving on. Okay, Brian Stack, awesome writer of the Colbert Report. I think he worked with Conan for many years. And Brian Stack, ladies and gentlemen, he's at BrianStack153. Check him out because he tweets a lot of cool shit too, like YouTube videos and music and stuff. And I don't know, sometimes you just run into somebody on Twitter and you get the sense you're on the same frequency level as them. I'm not suggesting I'm as talented as Brian, but I mean, is in terms of things you like and things you
You know, you can tell a lot about how interested someone is in a certain art form, whether that's music or whatever the case is. You know, he's a big dog lover too. He's got a, I believe his dog's name is Darby, if I recall correctly.
Anyway, good guy. You can follow him at BrianStack153. He's got some good shit there, and he says, sorry, I was on a flight and didn't see this. Thanks for inviting me anyway. Nice guy. And that's part of the reason he was invited is because I chose some pretty engaging people that that I thought might have some interesting stuff to add. And he's always been very engaging, and I appreciate that, Brian. Okay, Bill and Frank, if eat pop culture again, are you regular? If so, what time of day do you poop? If not, what are you doing about it? I am regular. I normally poop. It's usually early in the morning or late at night. That's it. And someone else said, take magnesium at night before bed. We'll pop that plug in the AM. I don't know anything that's going on there. I don't know what to say about that. Is that it for the questions? That might be it. No, that can't be it. Okay, just hang tight with me there, people. Let's see if there's one more question. This has been fun. Is everyone having fun out there? I hope you are. You are listening to The Laughter Life with Adam McKay. I'm your host. That's me. Appreciate you all so very much coming here. You can follow us on Twitter. We're at Laugh Life Adam. You can check our webpage out. It's laughterlife.ca. And you can check us out on Patreon. And we started a Patreon page recently. And for the low, low price of $1 a month, you can join us and become a patron, and you will have access to exclusive content and discounts on merchandise as we get it. And also, we've decided, Sarah and Abby and I, we are huge animal advocates, and we love animals, as you all know. So we've decided to donate up to 50% of all the proceeds we make through Patreon to worthy animal charities of our choice. And each month, we will film ourselves handing over a check to the various charities. I think that kicks in at 100 patrons, though, or something. I forget what it is. It's the more patrons we get, the higher percentage we'll donate. And we just wanted to give back and do something nice because we love animals. And, you know, Abby the Black Lab's a sidekick, and we take real good care of her, and we want to take good care of as many animals as we can. And I think it's a great thing that we can get support from you guys for the Laughter Life and the content we create, because we aren't getting any money from anything. I got like $3 from Amazon. That's about it. But and we both work full time. She's actually in the veterinary business, so you know she's really into the animals and stuff. And we just wanted to give something back, you know. So it's a win-win-win. If you join us on Patreon. Alright, I think that's it. I can't find any more questions, so I'm going to call this one quits. You're all very special to us at the Laughter Life, okay? We really do appreciate all your engagement and all the bullshit that you put up with, and the likes, and all, you know, all that stuff. It's fun. It's a lot of fun to do, and the reason it's a lot of fun is because of everyone's involvement and how engaged they are, and I appreciate that. And I'm not going to plug ourselves anymore, because I feel like I've done that enough. I'd like to thank again CastBox for being our gracious hosts, and you should check them out at castbox.fm, and you all have a very good night.